Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Tasmanian Devin here, and I am so pumped for this one as a follow-up conversation. We're going to be going in and having a fireside chat with Ellen Bensky and Steve Nonis of Turner Fleischer. And at the pre-interview, we were talking, and Ellen will let you know that she is not an architect. She comes from a psychology and finance background. But Steve, who's the principal of 16 years, is a full-fledged architect at Turner Fleischer. So I had the pleasure of meeting them and sitting in at their presentation at Digital Built Week in Seattle. And I'll let Matt McMullen, my guest co-host, tee this up because he gets to actually go through this presentation like with the rest of the Art of Construction tribe because he did not go to this presentation. And I let him know that full force. My guest co-host, Matt McMullen, missed the best presentation. So you have me to thank that we got them to come in. We're going to go into Studio AOC and have a fireside chat with Ellen and Steve of Turner Fleischer. So you can give me praises now, Matt.
Wow. That was powerful. You know, I mean, this is in the top three things that I regret in my entire life. But excited about this. Really looking forward to the conversation today.
So what is today's conversation all about? We're going to go in and we're going to talk about research and development, how much it's talked about, but how rarely it's applied in AEC firms. And this presentation that we get to recreate here today on the Fireside Chat podcast, I'm so jazzed because they really bring real world tools that they're using and how you can understand the benefits, learn how this integrates into best practices, but supporting a profitable workflow, resulting in enhanced service offerings, implementing technology, developing website content, empowering your staff, and increasing client engagement despite the human resource and financial concerns. So what are the learning objectives? After listening to this podcast, the Art of Construction Tribe will learn how to integrate R&D into their workflow, examine the human resource and financial concerns that accompany this choice, gain the knowledge of how a culture that encourages an incubator mindset, where ideas are nurtured and given time to develop, that has led to significant unplanned benefits. Talking some R&D and a few other things, but boy, this one's going to be good. We're going to have them go through and recreate this presentation with Ellen and Steven. So let's get in and have the speed round and get to know Ellen and Steven. Let's do this, huh, Matt?
I'm excited.
All right, lock and load, tribe. Here we go. Ellen, what's your favorite beverage?
A vodka martini, straight up with olives.
All right, there we go. What's the favorite place you've traveled?
I've traveled a lot of places in my life thus far, but my favorite one is for sure getting to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Oh, wow. Give us one story from that.
Oh, gosh, there's a million. But it was my 50th birthday dream to end up at the top of that mountain. And after a year of intense training and research, I grabbed eight of my friends who had it on their bucket list. And we went out to conquer that mountain. And four of us made it to the top. So I would definitely say seeing the sunrise standing on the top of that mountain was definitely an experience of my life.
Awesome. What a moment. What's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we passionately call the art of construction?
Well, you can imagine what follow that story is travel and adventure. Anything that has to do with a mountain, anything that involves hiking, any kind of a physical goal that I can have in a place that I've never been is absolutely where my passion outside of this industry lies.
Awesome. Well, next we'll get to know your background and what led you to working with Turner Fleischer and what you do with them. But we also have another guest. So there's going to be four of us in Studio AOC today. And we have Steven. What's your favorite beverage?
Well, first of all, that's a tough act to follow. But my favorite beverage, you can't go wrong with a good glass of red wine. Favorites are Northern Italian wines, a nice ripasso, Goes good with steak.
Awesome. And what's a favorite place you've traveled?
I've traveled maybe not as much as Ellen, but I've traveled quite a bit, this wonderful world. I'd have to say Barcelona. Fantastic architecture, fantastic nightlife, beach, a little bit of everything. Been there a few times. Love it.
Awesome. Well, what give us one experience or story from that?
I don't know if it's appropriate for this this podcast. The nightlife is just fantastic there, and everything just starts that much later in Barcelona. You're eating dinner at 11 o'clock. You're going to clubs at 2, 3 in the morning. You're coming home with the sunrise. So I guess I did see the sunrise as well in Barcelona. The nightlife was just fantastic. Had some great times with friends over there. Good times.
Awesome. And what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction?
Favorite hobby or interest? It's an interesting one. They've changed over the years, but one of the things working here at Turner Fleischer, big cycling component here at the firm. Over the last couple of years, really got into cycling. Haven't done too much of it this summer, but I've purchased my second bike, carbon fiber, putting all the bells and whistles on it. But riding is fantastic. Getting out there, whether in a group or just by yourself, just to be in your own space, thinking, it's absolutely been fantastic. Never thought I would have loved it as much as I do.
Awesome. Well, the sun is shining on us, Art of Construction Tribe, today. Ellen, what's your story of leading us to the podcast here today?
Oh, gosh. So my story in a nutshell, I'm an American transplanted into Canada due to meeting somebody from Canada. Psychology major in university, but I needed to hit the ground running working. So started working in a computer company, and 5 years later was running it. But I left because I didn't like the direction and the sort of person that the owner was. And I answered an ad in the newspaper from Peter Turner, who had an architectural practice and was looking for somebody to run the books. He had a piece of software that was still wrapped in cellophane that he needed and wanted to get installed. Met him on a Saturday. He handed me the box and said, "Can you do this?" I didn't know anything about architecture. I had no idea what that accounting package was, but he seemed like a really nice person, and architecture always intrigued me. And fast forward 29 years, and I am absolutely the proud CEO and CFO and principal at a company that I've watched grow from 12 people to 150.
Awesome. Way to tee that up. And Steve, your role with the Turner Fleischer?
So I am the newest partner, celebrated second anniversary of that this past April. Grew up in construction. Family business, and always had sort of a fondness for putting things together. Early on in my life, you know, had that sort of innocent sort of view of I wanted to be an architect. No sort of history with family of being an architecture. Just had that passion for it, and sort of was lucky enough to go to the University of Toronto here. And started my career, worked at a few different size firms, but wasn't really liking it. Had a friend that actually was working at Turner Fleischer, brought me in for an interview December 2002, started January 2003, and 16 and a half years later, I'm here telling my story. And I saw it grow from 40 to 150 people. And even though I've only been a partner for 2 years, the partners were actually fantastic through my development here. Even early on, having me part of some very formative conversations of the firm and sort of where they wanted it to go, and being fairly transparent about what succession looked like and the opportunities available. So it's been it's a fantastic growth here at the firm, and I'm looking to carry it on through the next generation.
Outstanding. So we got to know a little bit about Stephen and Helen and their background. So Helen, tell us, you're headquartered in Toronto, right? And tell us about Turner Fleischer, the company.
Turner Fleischer, we're in Toronto. We have a small office in Halifax. And when I say small, there's two people out there. But we've got some of our big retail clients that are based out there that wanted a presence. But the other 148 of us are in Toronto, and we focus on residential, mixed use, commercial, retail, architecture, interior design, planning, and we have been in business for 45 years. This is actually our 45th year this year. So we are really proud of sort of the growth and development of the firm over those 45 years.
I think part of that also is in the work that Ellen's described that we do here at Turner Fleischer. It's all private sector work, which is a big component of our story and sort of what we're about and sort of what we've been sharing at the various different conferences that we've attended and presented at.
Outstanding. And I love on your website where you say cutting edge, others claim it, we live it. And I had the pleasure of sitting in on the presentation at Digital Built Week in Seattle this year, and it was titled Research and Development, a Dedicated Approach to Office Advancement. So I think we can live it together when you do this presentation. So we're all going to sit back and enjoy and watch you guys pass the baton back and forth of how Turner Fleischer works.
Perfect. So to understand sort of why do we feel that R&D is really important in an architectural firm, and we've kind of brought together a few of our top reasons for focusing on R&D as a firm, because as you were saying, Devin, I mean we believe in technology, we believe in innovation, but a lot of firms say they do it, but we actually do it. And even, you know, if looking at our website, you know, just portraying our brand out there, which we redeveloped about a year and a half ago, we've got modules in our how section that really can show our clients and prospective staff members actual tangible ways in which we utilize technology in our workflow. And that's the same focus that we bring to our research and development, because you can't apply technology to your workflow without understanding what technology is out there that may benefit your workflow. So some of the reasons why we look at technology at Turner Fleischer, and some of these are obvious to people in the industry, and one of them is, you know, that innovation is accelerating exponentially and disruption is absolutely inevitable and digital transformation is unavoidable. In our own firm, we used to look for innovation, and by the time we heard about something and we implemented it, we were always a year or two or three or four kind of behind the next and best that was out there on the market. And so we believe that utilizing R&D in a strategic way helps you become able to be aligned. As soon as something new hits the market, we start looking at it. And if it works for us and we see a place for it, we're bringing it in immediately after it's known out there in the market. We also believe that the change in the workflow in a BIM environment, where you're bringing the standard workflow towards the front end of a project, that you need to be understanding how you can leverage the information that you're bringing into that new workflow in a faster manner, and R&D is definitely part of that. We're in Canada, and that leads us to some really interesting issues in that we're the only G7 country that has not mandated BIM. And so that affects us in R&D in an interesting way, because if the government were mandating BIM, then public sector projects would be utilizing BIM, and that would flow down into the private sector, which is where we do our work. And if that was happening, then we wouldn't necessarily need to be going out and educating our clients as much as we have to on the new things that we're researching and developing, because they would be coming from other areas. Two more sort of reasons that are interesting to us and sort of unique in our space: competition. So in Ontario alone, there in the past 10 years, there's been a jump from 1,300 certified practices to now there's over 1,900 certified practices. And what that does is well, what makes Turner Fleischer different than any other practice? And why would clients want to come to us? And why would staff want to come and work for us? And we believe that continuing to focus on R&D and leveraging our practice forward in a digital way is going to give us that differentiator in both of those sectors. And then an interesting last sort of measure for us is the demographics of our workforce. And we happen to have, and I like to call these greens and grays, and we've got 80% of our current workforce is under the age of 44, and 50% of that is under the age of 34. And that leads itself to a whole lot of topics that we could discuss on a whole other fireside chat in terms of demographics of workforce. But where it comes into play with research and development is, you know, we need to be teaching the greens about architecture. We need to be teaching the grays about technology, and we need to be in this whole research and development and implementation together. So we have to bridge that gap.
Yeah, so Ellen, that's a great introduction into your process. One thing that I wanted to ask was, you guys said you're trying to stay on the cutting edge and look at softwares and technologies and tools as they come out. And so I know you'll get into this later, but maybe just for our listeners, you could talk a little bit about, you know, the fear of, hey, what, you know, what do we do? How do we not roll this out? And then all of a sudden it leads us down a dead end tube with no cheese in it. Just a little bit about how you beta test some of that stuff before you roll it out to the entire firm.
I think you'll see that in some of the examples of the R&D that we do. But I believe a big differentiator is to understand that you can't just adopt something and have a really lofty goal that isn't attached to your actual practice and the work that you do, because that's not going to get you your biggest bang for your buck in terms of adoption and in terms of affecting the actual workflow of your practice. And so it's really pushing some of these new concepts through a process of discovery, beta testing, analysis of whether or not this will work, and then a decision, a strategic decision, to implement something across the firm.
I think part of that is also sort of accepting that there will be failures. You may go down a rabbit hole. You may actually have opportunities where the end goal isn't achieved, but with that does come learning that will help shape other decisions down the road. So I think if you sort of take away those stresses or those sort of limitations, then it really frees up the team to really do some good R&D. So I think that's a big thing that we really push over here. Failure really isn't a bad thing.
Part of the process.
So at the presentation you did, you had a lot of slides where you kind of, you know, had picture tracks where you went through kind of graphs. But can you talk us through on that? Like, how do you begin R&D?
Absolutely. So really, you know, based on all of the things that Ellen was sort of talking, all of these forces over here, really how we did it wasn't going to work. And really the best way to describe how we did R&D was just haphazard, by chance, sort of very, very loose, and just by chance, really. You know, one of the biggest changes that we did over here, one of the things that really changed what it was to be Turner Fleischer, was the implementation of Revit. You know, I used it at our presentation. You know, show of hands, how many people went down the road of using Architectural Desktop? I think everybody put up their hand. I think one person missed it, which I found interesting. But we went down that rabbit hole of Architectural Desktop, and even when we were doing the training, it was like, you know, hey, can we do this? And the trainer was, well, no, but Revit can. And we kept hearing these things about Revit. And so we stayed the course. We made the investment, a huge investment. Sure, Ellen can talk to that about Architectural Desktop, but we sent some staff to our first Autodesk University back in 2006 for Architectural Desktop training, and they actually came back and were talking more about Revit, and you know, Ellen actually went to an AAA conference and just by chance took a course and heard about Revit, called one of our other partners, Russell, back and said, listen, we really got to take a look at this Revit thing. And so, you know, towards the end of 2006, beginning of 2007, we actually made the move. We licked our wounds. We parked architectural desktop, and we made a full shift into Revit. So not to say that it really wasn't strategic, just was a whole bunch of different sort of by chance things that happened that actually led us down the road to implementing Revit. Things like Enscape and Dynamo. So two sort of things that, again, at Autodesk University, having some of our staff attend, sort of get an idea of what it is. Hey, listen, let's take a look at it. Can we implement it? It doesn't work that good. You know, it sort of went haphazardly down the road. But now with some strategic approaches to that, we're implementing Dynamo. We're implementing Enscape, VR, that type of stuff. Laser scanning, an idea with one of our associates that, hey, we should take a look at this laser scanning thing. And it was just, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have sort of adopted it. But again, it was just some idea sort of floating over there through a personal interest. So I think a lot of these haphazard things have led us down to some fantastic opportunities. But, you know, what else did we miss out during these opportunities over here? How else could we have implemented it maybe better and sort of fully understood? Even the implementation of Revit, our first Revit models were very AutoCAD-like, very, you know, work sets for layers and stuff. Did we fully understand the potential of BIM software? Or was it just about modeling now as opposed to drawing lines? So while some of these things have worked, yeah, they could have absolutely been done a little bit better, a little bit more strategic, and really why we needed to really revisit how we did R&D here at Turner Fleischer.
Great stuff. You can go back to different shows of different people we've met through Digital Built Week and the like. So like show like 151 with Scott Miatich, we'd go through the evolution of laser scanning. And I love how you talk through your evolution of using different tools, but refusing to, you know, look back, but use lessons learned and move forward. So that's great stuff. So next thing, talk to us about you on the presentation. You said you have a digital practice department. Can you walk us through that?
Absolutely. So in line with what Steve was saying, because our R&D was done haphazardly, and it was almost like who was sitting in that room by chance to hear that idea, and as well as some of the lessons learned from how we were trying to implement BIM in our company at first, we kind of sat back and said, you know what? We need to put together a team of people who are really focused on the whole idea of becoming a truly digital practice. So that involves BIM, but it also involves a lot of other things. And so how did we kind of figure out and put a really amazing mind map together of the areas of our practice that this team was going to impact? And they impact, you know, our practice as a whole, they impact our research and development, they impact our education, and they impact our outreach. And the more we thought about this team, the larger the team got. And we reached into our existing staff base to staff this team, and we also hired externally. So we hired a manager for the team because we knew we needed a level of leadership in this team that had an incredible level of knowledge of all things digital. So we got Saji in place as a manager of the team. And then we looked around our office, and a big thing at Turner Fleischer is giving people opportunities to change roles. And really knowing, despite being a 150 person firm, we really know our staff, and we have a layer of management in place that is unique in this industry as well. These are people managers, and they know their staff. And so six of the people that are on this department had other roles in the company, but we felt that they were ready to give up their roles in drawing and to give full time into developing a digital practice. So we've got those members on our team. We've got a dedicated laser scanning technologist on our team because we now own two laser scanners, and it's a big part of our workflow. And this summer, we hired two co-op students to be part of this team to kind of test out if these were full-time roles. So one is a full-time computer programmer that is from outside of the industry, and one is a full-time 3D printing technologist who is looking at, you know, how to utilize our 3D printer a little bit better in our firm. So that kind of rounds out the entire team on digital practice. So we've got these 9 people. They're involved in a variety of ways across the firm. And then we also have what we call development teams. And so the development teams are, they're really there for kind of 2 reasons. There's more than enough work that these 9 people can get to in certain areas that we're focused on. So one of those being automation. And so we have a development team called Automation Nation. And anybody can put in a request to be on a development team. It doesn't matter. We've got somebody on Automation Nation who's been with us 1 year. We have somebody who's been with us 12 years. It really doesn't matter. They just have a passion for coding and scripting. And then we allow them 2 hours a week to step away from their desk and whatever they're doing in their projects to work on automation. So even though they're not on the digital practice team, they don't have to be sitting back in the office going, oh man, I wish I could. We give them an opportunity to participate. And so they're writing scripts and doing research and development into automation. We have a technique development team that created all of the modules on our website. We've got an FM development team, and they work with putting the model of our office into facilities management and getting that all going. And we've got a virtual reality dev team. So, you know, a bunch of people who, you know, probably played a lot of video games as kids and really want to see how we can leverage VR and those types of tools in our workflow. So with all of these people dedicated to becoming a digital practice, R&D can now be done in a really strategic way. So we're thinking beforehand. When we go to conferences now, we're picking the people to attend who we want to be there because we want them to be going out there and getting specific knowledge. We sit with the conference course selection and we strategically determine who's going to attend what session and why they want to attend it and what we're trying to get out of it. And then when we come back, distilling that knowledge into tangible next steps in our firm for further investigation and implementation. And we showed this in this presentation and in another presentation we did at Built Australia at how we leverage things that we learned in these sessions and have implemented them directly into our workflow. So I think the key differentiator is thought.
I think the other piece is what Ellen's basically trying to show here is in terms of the R&D, whether it's the department or dev teams, one of the other things that we actually leverage is government grants. There's money out there for research and development. And it's in line with sort of how we want to align ourselves with a lot of the schools and actually getting out there, meeting some of the students, working on something that they can learn from, that we can leverage in our business, and that they can actually see how an office actually works. So we've actually done four grants with one of the colleges here at in Toronto, George Brown College, that have actually found their way into whether it's our facilities management development dev team or actually into some of the quantity takeoff exercises that we're doing for a client, actually validating some of our content. So there's a number of different ways that we're approaching R&D. So while there's, I'd like to say maybe an overarching structure on this, there's so many different opportunities and different ways of actually gaining that knowledge, leveraging it, sharing it, and implementing it, and really getting, I'll have to say it, an ROI on it. So where it's exciting, and it really gives staff a number of different opportunities to actually be part of the growth of the firm.
That's such great stuff. And I want to go on a little story here as the being the official media partner for Digital Built Week. We did several podcasts leading up to it, several of them while we were there, like the event podcast with Steve Burrows, and now these follow-up ones. And what I'm putting this all together, the journey I'm going to go on here is that, Matt, you had made the comment that as you were there as the guest co-host of the Art of Construction Council, but representing as the principal with Able Design Group here in Denver, Colorado, what did a lot of the doers in the industry say to you as you were walking around having discussions with them throughout the week?
Well, the thing I find interesting is, you know, Ellen and Steve referred to it as grays and greens, and I guess I've moved over, you know, into the gray range. And so walking around talking to a lot of the young folk that we have in our office as well too. There was surprise that I was there as a principal, and they said, man, we really wish more of the principals of our large firms were there to really hear this, because when we come back, you know, we're kind of looked on as sort of the digital geeks, and so it's hard to pass that message along. And so I guess the thing that impresses me about what the culture that you've built, Ellen and Steve, is that you guys are, one, you understand the importance of it, you understand where the industry and where the space is moving to, but you've created a culture there where you're crossing lines between senior leadership and junior up-and-comers, and then making sure you're driving that down into all of the culture and all of the firm. So if you chat about that a little bit.
Yeah, so here's the moment of time where I'm sitting in the audience, in the middle of the audience, just saying, Digital Bill Week said, Devin, we want you to go to this presentation. They had given me a list of ones they thought were really good for me. So I'm sitting there, and the aha moment and the mic drop, and the whole room is in there, and they're like 150 people. And then they show the slide of this digital practice team with 9 people on this digital practice team. And all these other firms that are sitting in the room are like, what, this is whispers. Everyone's what we have 200 people and there's only 2 of us. And everyone's the ROI, and everyone just starts like, just like these bees in the audience going all over the place. And I'm sitting there like, the Tasmanian Devin Disruptor has something here that I'm going to go to a podcast and I'm going to challenge the Art of Construction tribe to say the different silos we're trying to break down is that the people, she talked about the charts of the age of the people in their firm at the beginning of this. And they're there as the principals talking about, this is not an ROI thing, this is a culture thing. And so the culture, and then Ellen was in a spot where she didn't know one of the answers that someone had said. And she goes, well, I can't speak, I don't remember the name, but they had people actually in the audience that I don't think was thought through or planned. They were just there because they truly have this culture of learning and excellence. And so I was so proud of Turner Fleischer because the guys in the audience jumped up and they were so jazzed to answer or talk about that's something that hadn't been planned out. That was the aha moment that I wanted to just kind of chime in here and be the disruptor in the middle of this presentation to say that was authentic and it was super cool what you guys did. So what would you speak about your audience in the team that you selected and how that actually went down as we bring this full circle? Because you can just go to a conference, take in and garbage in, garbage out, or we can really make something and connect the dots truly. So what's your take with that, Ellen, when I talk about culture and the audience of 2 to 9 people and all the buzz in the room?
Absolutely. That was an incredible moment for us too. And we've taken this show on the road for the past, 8 months or so. And that was one of the best moments for us as presenters, and sharing our story was just that, how it resonated in the room. And I always get really sad when I talk to people afterwards and they're like, oh man, you know, my leadership at my firm, they just don't get it. And will you come and talk to them? And I've got to be 85% billable and run, you know, the BIM department at my firm, and I can't do it, and I'm working at night, and so that was, you know, we made that decision. And somebody asked in the audience about, you know, well, how much does this cost you? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to give you the numbers, but figure it out. I mean, there's 9 people, estimated salary. There's 24 people with 2 hours a week. You can probably calculate that. It's a lot of money, but you know, the flip side of it is if you're partnering in your leadership or focused on running a really well-oiled machine and have a good business model, they should be able to make the money and take some of that money and inject it back into the firm to do the things that they believe in. And we believe in this from the top down. And the moment that you're talking about having Christian and Rocky in the room, that was totally not planned as part of the presentation for sure. They were there on specific for specific reasons as members of the digital practice department, and they had been to, you know, carefully selected classes, but they wanted to hear Steve and I speak. And I think being able to say these things and then look over at Christian and Rocky and ask them a question or have them responding to the things that we're saying was really amazing. And I hope and I hear from you, Devin, that it led to the authenticity of it, that we're not talking about something that doesn't actually really exist. And that if we're saying that we're proud of this team and that this is where these people came from and that this is how these roles were picked for them, and then, you know, I can look at Rocky and say, yeah, right, you had five different jobs here and we found the right one for you, correct? And he's like, absolutely.
I think the other thing was just seeing how excited Christian and Rocky, because it was the first time they actually heard us speak about digital practice, R&D, sort of what they do day in and day out. So as excited as Ellen and I were to sort of share the story, they were just, they were bouncing off the walls. And it was great, even for Ellen and I, to sort of see how they sort of enjoyed how we shared their story. So I think it was a fantastic sort of Turner Fleischer win. And I think everybody in that room sort of benefited from that interaction between us and our team.
So I just wanted to pick up on a point that Ellen made here just earlier, and it's a business point. And I think everybody, all of our listeners will know what we're talking about here, is that you kind of have a choice when you're an architectural firm, is that either you can pick your own charities or the charities will pick you. And so what I appreciate about Turner Fleischer is that you guys are reinvesting in yourselves and reinvesting in the firm, which then means you're reinvesting in your clients versus, you know, how it is sometimes projects are running over budget and you kind of end up using having your client be a charity and you invest in them immediately. So I really appreciate the full circle business cycle that you guys are talking about here.
I think to me, it's a deal breaker. And I also have the added benefit of sitting with both titles. So, you know, I've told this story and I told it in Seattle about, you know, being the CEO and the CFO is a unique position that I value highly. But, you know, my CEO brain can have an idea and I just have to present it to my CFO brain and go, hey, can I have the money to do this? And so getting the approvals for my budget as CEO is really easy, but then it also, though, you know, not to diminish the responsibility that I feel to be able to execute on those so that people don't say I'm, you know, just satisfying my own selfish desires by having these two roles. But I know that it makes it a lot easier because I hear from people all the time, you know, we have to present our budgets and nobody thinks it's important, so they're not giving me the budget to do this.
I was just saying that's the positive side of the Sybil story, you know, where you've got the CEO and the CFO brain and you're able to have that conversation and come up with the best decision for the firm.
I think, you know, to add to that, one of the things, we actually led a roundtable as part of DTS in Seattle. And, you know, we keep talking about, and it sort of lends itself to the thing about, you know, not many principals were at DBEI. And so, you know, leadership and sort of fully understanding. And through a roundtable, we're like, you know, Ellen and I are leading a roundtable. We're doing presentation. We're attending these conferences because we see the value. Turner Fleischer has top-down support. And one of the comments that came out of that was, top-down support is great, but you also need bottom-up support. And it was like, oh, okay. And that sort of feeds quite nicely into the sort of dev teams and having these opportunities for staff. So now you've got this sort of organic growth. Like, here's the support from the top. Here's the passion, the drive from the bottom. And in the middle, you're meeting at this fantastic sweet spot that you can actually push and leverage and really, really drive what can be done. And I thought that was just something that, as much as we promote and we're firm believers of top-down support, having that bottom-up support really, really helps as well push a lot of this stuff.
I love that. And at the presentation, you talked through the, you know, the inputs and developing good processes, like you talked about your digital practice managers and teams. Can you kind of take us down a journey and talk through like the outputs and how you talk through a lot of really good real-world case studies of how you went through the processes and really the awesome outputs you got from a Power BI, for example?
Sure. I mean, I think in what we wanted to show and what we do here at Turner Fleischer is we use the R&D to solve real-world problems alongside of some, you know, problems that we want to stretch ourselves to. And part of the reason we do it is because we have these real problems and we're always looking for efficiency, because that goes back to the business model that if you're not efficient, you're not making money, you can't do this. So we want to tackle some of these things at the same time with R&D. So one of the ones that we talked about and shared is something that we thought was really an interesting combination of taking our accounting ERP software, which is ClearView InFocus, which is a SQL database, and taking that and linking that with the SQL database behind Revit. And so being able to take a person from my accounting department working with the manager of my digital practice department and writing some code connections between specific areas in focus that are meeting and aligning and pulling information into Revit. And so they may seem really banal to people, but if you think about it, we pulled employee information and we pulled project information. And we outputted those in areas like project initialization script, a model audit script, content request form script, and a support ticket script. And in each one of those four different scripts, you need basic employee information and you need basic project information, project name, project number, address, employee name, employee. Well, every time somebody enters that information, there's a possibility for them to enter it incorrectly. And therefore, that's just completely inefficient. So once we made that connection, now InFocus is a single source of truth for all of that type of information, and it's automatically getting pulled and populating back into Revit, populating into Excel spreadsheets, going in through SQL Server and coming out in a Power BI display so that we can understand how many support tickets and what type of support tickets have been implemented by different people across the firm and across departments.
I think one of the other things that we've actually started leveraging as well, and it's sort of rooted in how we started our BIM journey with our BIM transformation team. And really it was about transformation. And sort of, you know, it's looking back, it's like, wow, why did we do it that way? But at that time, our sort of knowledge, our sort of understanding of the potential of BIM and how we can leverage it, I understand where it came from. So things like model health, just basically telling the project teams, okay, I want you to take half an hour every Friday and I want you to clean up all your project warnings. Well, that's great. And then, you know, I want you to document it in this Excel sheet. And give me a brief summary. And so it just seemed like this laborious task that really lost momentum very, very early on, because warnings were going up, down. We weren't understanding why things were happening. You know, people were getting sort of frustrated that having to write the same things over and over again. And guess what? That data, nothing was being done with it. It was just sitting in an Excel sheet. Wonderful, great, but nothing was being done with it. And so, you know, staff were saying, well, why am I doing this? What warnings are important for me to do? Why should I be doing this? How come I've got to take time out of my schedule to keep a model healthy, that I've inherited this model from someone else, they should be cleaning it? It was really just a messy process. Great intentions, but really no strategy to sort of working through it. So, you know, with our digital practice team, we're able to say, okay, let's focus on a few errors. Let's focus on a few things that, you know, we can sort of automate. How can we pull and extract things from Revit, leveraging Dynamo, pulling it into a SQL database, and then visualizing it through Power BI? How can I put it in front of a project manager in a graph form, a chart form, something that they can visually see, and something as simple as, you know, a CAD import. Hey, I've got two CAD imports. You know, can I actually take a look at that and see if I can actually get rid of it, get it out of my model, and clean it up? And then, you know what, I'll get a check. I'll get a point for that. So again, we're sort of gamifying this model health check and sort of doing it strategically, where we're leveraging the information that we're putting into our model, putting it, spitting it out into Power BI. The project team can evaluate it, make those quick, easy cleanups, and then we're on. So we're keeping good, healthy models with very little, minimal input in terms of the analysis. It's all been automated. So again, starting from something that really didn't work with great intention to something that does work with fantastic results.
So I think we can also share just some other things that are our basic workflow issues that we've kind of leveraged some of the knowledge that we've gained from attending a Built conference. We have a lot of charity events in our office, and so we raise a lot of money. And as Steve was saying, man, we're really big into cycling, and we're always raising money all year for this big ride that we do. And so people are always putting IOUs down. So I don't have a dollar to pay for my coffee, and so I'm writing it down on a piece of paper. And I don't have $2 to pay for my lunch. And a member of my accounting team is taking all of those pieces of paper and putting them into an Excel spreadsheet, and then sending reminders to staff that they owe this money, and then getting the money from staff and telling them what their balance is. And it was insane. And one of our staff members, Marco, went to Built North America last year, and he took a course on Power Apps. And he came back and he was like, wait a minute, we can leverage Power Apps in a lot of things we're doing at the firm. And so he started, you know, people always talk about low-hanging fruit. Well, he started with this IOU problem. And he leveraged the Power Apps community and learning at home. And then he went through app development and Office 365. And he went through a whole process of creating a Power App for this. We got a beta test group together. They worked out some kinks and bugs, gave him feedback. He came out with a new version. And then we rolled it out across the firm. And so now you take your QR code badge when you take something and you don't have the money, and you enter it right into the Power App, how much money you owe. It gives you a running total that you can check through the app. And when Joan comes around with the debit machine to pay your debt, it gets automatically taken off of your balance in the Power App. So that might not seem like a huge thing for some people, but not only did it give Marco experience in developing a Power App, which now he can leverage and develop in a further manner for the rest of the firm in different areas, but it saved a ton of time that was being wasted.
I
have to chime in. That was one of the things you taught me on the Power App. I actually have the Art of Construction team now. We're building a Power App for our virtual experience to just walk that through, because it's just making an easy platform to build from. So thank you for giving that example that we can take with a call to action.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a perfect example of pay it forward, right? And then it just keeps going and going. And someone in the Art of Construction tribe is going to hear that and go, oh, wait, I can do it. And that's the beauty of this whole thing in my mind.
I think it also speaks to a lot of the things that, you know, we go to conferences and you kind of want to hit that home run. But if you're able to take one thing, and as Ellen stated, like early on, is, you know, how do you apply it to your firm? What's important to your firm? We've seen numerous presentations, even the last couple weeks, where firms are doing some fantastic things on airport projects that we would never do anything on, but there's ideas in there that we can implement. And one of the other things that we've done in terms of implementing is we generate a number of shadow studies as part of our high-rise residential mixed-use approvals. Cities want density, but they don't want shadows. And so how did we sort of use the, you know, our culture here of just asking questions? If someone is doing something over and over again, or something is just taking a ridiculously lengthy amount of time, you know, let's talk about it. Can we automate it? Can we do something? So one of the things that I'm actually very ecstatic about is a shadow generator that we've now started to develop with our co-op programming student. So basically presenting him with a problem and saying, this is our workflow, this is what we do. I create a massing model in SketchUp. I create my shadow views. Then I create another SketchUp model of just my building itself, so I can generate that building's view, that building's shadow. I overlay them, and I do this for 32 different times. I do this for every different version of the building that the client wants to show to the city. The amount of work that this takes, we have a co-op student that I think she spent the first 6 weeks of her summer over here just generating shadows. She's tired of it. I don't blame her. So, you know, how can we sort of automate this? And so basically understanding the program, the problem at hand. Mohsin, our programmer, has no architectural background, but he understands what we need to do, the math behind it, what I want to show, what I don't want to show. So with his expertise, we've actually now, out of Revit, been able to actually create three different shadows using one shadow generator. So I can generate the existing shadow, I can generate the overlapping shadow of my new building on the existing, and I can show the new shadow that I'm now imposing, which is absolutely fantastic with one click of a button. I take those views, throw them on my sheet, I'm off to the races. I don't need SketchUp, Photoshop, Revit. I do everything from Revit. And this one here, truth be told, is still in the beta testing, but we're getting so close to actually implementing this into our day-to-day. And it's one, hopefully you can hear it through the podcast, that I'm actually like ridiculously happy about this, because this will save a ton of time. Changes, we'll change the height of the building, we'll knock out the shadows instantly. Hopefully none of my clients are hearing this, but it's going to be fantastic. We're almost there.
I think what this is showing, and you can see, you know, why do we believe, you know, again, goes back to, people like to talk about ROI all the time, right? ROI, what's your ROI? And so many people want a number, you know, tell me what it's going to be in dollars and hours and cents and savings. And if you look at the process that we go through, whether we're creating a shadow generator script, or we're creating an IOU money collecting tool, it starts with the presentation of an idea. That idea goes into proof of concept. That proof of concept starts into a scripting process. You get the programming expertise working with the person who gave you the idea, so now they're collaborating. And then you reach out into your studio and you bring in people to be beta testers, so now they're part of the conversation. And then you go through the beta testing process, and then you release it into, as we heard in one of the sessions we went to in Seattle, and we keep using it, it just keeps sticking, but into that gen pop, your general population out there in your studio, and then they begin to use it. And by going through this process time and time again, we're reaching more and more members of the studio and bringing them into the process. So when we roll out new things, that adoption rate is really high, because they understand, they've been part of it. And then it also creates people that are now thinking of, hey, wait a minute.
What else can we
automate? So as they're going through their every day, they're looking at things they're doing and go, like, I don't want to do this again. This is ridiculously repetitive. Wait a minute. Hey, can we do a script and help me here? So that's where you're getting the incredible ROI, because you're getting the ideas, and then you're being able to really affect people's workflow. And where's your biggest bang for your buck? In savings and efficiency, in people in studio being a part of this and understanding it. And, you know, go back to your greens and your grays. What do the greens want? Everybody talks about this millennial, whatever you want to call them. All they want to know is why. Why are we doing this? And the what's in it for me, right? You're hitting all of those things in one workflow.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. I was just, as you were telling that story, Ellen, I was thinking about, you know, back in the day, you know, people would complain about doing window and door schedules, you know, and then you guys talk about, you know, you'd say, well, hey, you think that's bad? I was generating shadows all the time. And so what you're doing is you're harnessing that eagerness to learn and eagerness to contribute. And you're giving the younger folk a platform and a process to engage and create value within the firm and jump right in. I think that's excellent.
Yeah, you guys have done a really cool story about 3D printing, because there's the concept of Art of Construction, as we're trying to break down these silos and connect technology with handshakes. There's so many video game type stuff up there. But there's people that want to know why, and they want to actually use this stuff and put it into the business. And that's where I've seen you guys empower them. Talk us through the numbers that you built with the 3D printer. You're like, what should we do with this thing? I loved that story at the presentation.
So we're doing a renovation to our office, and part of the work with my interior designers was, what are we going to use for signage? And, you know, we were going to use metal letters and iron letters, and they were heavy and they were costly and this and that. And then they were like, wait a minute, we have this 3D printer that's sitting in the office that is utilized most of the time as a nice place for Steve to work because it's at a height that's really good to put some papers on and have a conversation. But it's not all about Steve. And how do we actually use this machine? And so we're like, oh, let's 3D print them. And then we did a test 3D print, and we got this number that was really heavy, and it was full of material, and that was going to be really expensive. And so we were creating the same problem we were trying to fix. So we got a student, Kristen, in here for the summer who is studying industrial design. And he looked at, okay, wait a minute, you want to build these letters, you want them to be light, you want to be able to hang them easily, why don't we have two pieces that snap together? And then they're hollow in the middle, so you're using like a fraction of the material, your cost is going to be lower, and they're going to be, and so, hey, we're like, go for it. And we're now in the process of printing all of the signage for our new office utilizing this methodology with our 3D printer.
I think as much as technology has a place and really has pushed what we can do, there is something about that physical model. And I remember when we first got our 3D printer, having that physical model, brought it to the client's office. He's like, what is this? This is a waste. What are you wasting your time with this for? Here, let's look at the drawing. I think we flipped one page, and then the whole hour and a half was just looking at the model in the middle of the table. And I want to move this. I want to change this. You know, how can we actually leverage part of that, the stuff that we went to architecture school for, the stuff that we did, there is a place for it. So even though there's technology being used to develop these 3D models, some thought, having Christian, even from that interior design, industrial design point of view, what else can we do with our models, the movable pieces, the movable parts, transparencies, how can we sort of elevate what we've been able to do? So it's been fantastic to have him here through the summer and help really elevate what we're doing with our 3D printer.
Yeah, the other thing from your presentation I wanted you guys to just talk about is that the whole facility maintenance thing, and there's somebody that is the master wizard. And I raise my hand and say that I'm the same. I'm in that boat, you know, owning multiple locations that we call our experience centers, that there's that one person that is the tribal knowledge, right? And you guys talk through a plan of how you are managing that tribal knowledge to the team and moving it forward to help you better sleep at night if that tribal knowledge is gone.
Absolutely. So the partner of which you speak is John Chow. And I wish the tribe could actually see the photo of John, because it's a perfect, when you start your conversations with John, he's got that look on his face. But honestly, anything related to our office here at 67 Lesno, it's in John's head. John, who are the guys that shovel our snow? Who's the maintenance company? The chair's broken. Where do we get the chairs? Who do we call for the fire extinguishers? Everything is in his head. And so how do we extract all that knowledge from John the Gray, if you will? And how do we start sort of getting that knowledge into something that is manageable, sustainable, understood, and that can sort of stand the test of time? And so leveraging one of the research grants that we did with George Brown College, an ENSER grant, a government grant, was, okay, we're going to build our office. We're going to have a facilities management model, number one, to manage our office. But also, as I mentioned when we first started off, we work in the private sector. We want to use our model as an example to some of our clients that retain ownership of their own buildings, the potential of leveraging the information that we're putting in as we're doing new projects, renovations, new builds. They can actually take that on and use it through the life cycle of their building. So basically, John worked very closely with the facilities management dev team to get his knowledge into the actual model, creating parameters of each of the content, each of the assets that we have, and building this robust model that we're actually now going to be able to leverage to do our renovation, our huge renovation coming on. So building that foundation, getting the info from John, and then actually bringing it into an app that our maintenance department can actually leverage and use. So something's broken, a ticket can be put in, it can be tracked, it can be fixed, solved, So you've got that whole cohesiveness with how we're running our facility here, our business, outside of the architecture side of things. Really the day-to-day stuff that keeps the lights on, the air moving, and keeps everything fully functioning here at Turner Fleischer.
I think that's an important point, and I just bring this up for the portions of the tribe that are facilities managers, directors of facilities, for building engineers, also real estate brokerages, and it's like you mentioned, you know, brokerage houses that are also in the buy, build, and hold. So that'd be like, you know, Jones Lang LaSalle, et cetera. Very important to realize that there are architects out there, firms like Turner Fleischer, that could come in and work with your maintenance manager or director of facilities or building engineer and capture and leverage that information. Very important service that you guys are offering.
And it's actually not that difficult. I think people get overwhelmed with it. But if you really delve down and even just through the process of getting the information out, distill it and break it down to some very simple expectations, you start building on that. And sooner or later, you're putting more information than you'd ever thought and leveraging that information in a facilities management model. So just doing this, obviously self-interest on our end for our own building, but we're using it. We're using it as an example of what can be done to clients that may not fully understand the potential.
Awesome stuff. You have done such a phenomenal job, and I've challenged you to say, take these slides and put them into an audio only podcast. And you absolutely crushed it, because you had a lot of slides with a lot of graphs and details, and you did a wonderful job. But one of the best things of every presentation, that really something that you can take with you and learn from, is something that they give you a call to actions or lessons learned. And you ended that with our top 10 lessons learned for a dedicated approach to research and development. So could you guys walk us through those top 10 that you gave us to bring us home?
Absolutely. So our number 10 lessons learned for a dedicated approach to office to R&D. Number 10 is top-down support. Leadership has to be invested. Without leadership, R&D is stifled. And it really has to be more than a single staff member's ideas in isolation. And the rest of the staff in your studio need to be empowered to share their ideas as well.
Absolutely. Oh, so we're doing numbers. Number 9, I think it's a fallacy to believe that you can work on projects and implement innovation concurrently. You know, the part-time BIM managers, you don't have the time, the facility to do firm-wide initiatives and still do the work that you do. It's project deadlines get in the way. They come first. Those pay the bill, which then sort of sacrifices everything else that you're trying to do. So it really is a fallacy.
And next one is really the R&D strategy has to be aligned with the goals of your firm. You know, pie in the sky goals are great, but if they don't have a meaningful impact on your operations, they really don't support a profitable workflow. You need to have a clear understanding of what the end goal of your R&D efforts are.
Number 7, as I mentioned before, scope of these initiatives exponentially changes and failures will occur. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be nimble, agile. It's actually no different than what we do as architects. Clients change their mind. You've got to bounce, respond. Don't get too invested. Don't be scared to stop. Failures are okay.
Number 6 for you. Use project staff to beta test results. We believe very strongly that feedback drives success and that understanding the process that you're going through leads to a greater adoption of the final product.
Number 5, attend conferences with purpose. Ensure the right people are attending the right sessions. Have conversations around them. Don't judge a conference or a session by the title. You really got to sort of listen and understand. Have a structure in place to implement learning in a real way upon return. One of the simple things that we tell each of our staff attending conferences, try and bring back one thing. We're not trying to hit home runs here, one little thing. And if 6 of us are going, that's 6 things that we can actually bring back and leverage here at the firm.
Number 4, adopt an incubator mindset and give the staff the opportunity to step away from their day to day. So even if they don't have the opportunity to work 100% in innovation or digital or BIM or whatever you want to call it in your firm, this can lead to new roles. It allows people to explore their passions and it facilitates better adoption of R&D.
Number three, the more staff know, the more they will embrace it. It's that almost that skin in the game. They're part of it. They understand the why. They understand the what's in it for me. And I think the awareness of potential automation, being exposed to this, they can start thinking of different ways of impacting change. And it also empowers them to speak to clients knowledgeably and sort of, again, keeping that going. If clients sort of understand, hey, what are you guys working on? They're intrigued, they're excited. Any way to save a dollar, be more efficient, clients are absolutely involved in that. And we really push a lot of our staff to have that point contact with our clients and consultants.
I think that's a really big one. I think just to add to number three, that the more staff know, the more trust clients will have in you as a firm. Because if they're asking a staff a question, then the staff member has to answer and say, well, I don't know, there's a couple of, you know, software geeks that sit at the back of our office in a room at the back. I'm not really sure what they're doing, and I'm not really sure how that affects you and your project. You know, or if they can say, hey, yeah, you know, I know last week they were working on a shadow generator, and, you know, the next time we have to look at that for one of your projects, I'm sure we're going to be able to use that. So I think that's another benefit of having staff know more. And number two is one that, you know, as a finance person, I hold this very high. Don't expect the ROI to be measurable. Be patient. R&D takes time. Don't set deliberate utilization targets for R&D. Understand the impact to your staff of being part of progress. And remember that workflow efficiencies lead to increased profit. And increased client engagement and awareness leads to new business.
And the final number one of our top 10 is...
I was going to ask for a drum roll, but thank you for the intro, Devin. R&D is essential to future-proofing a practice. We fully believe this, and we hope the tribe sort of understands the potential of this.
Awesome stuff. And as this platform podcast is all about connecting technology to handshakes and futuristic thinking and always be learning, Stephen, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
I think it's getting my crystal ball is it's coming. Whether you like it or not, it is going to be a reality. What I would love to see is the subcontractors, the trades, really starting to adopt it. I know in the sector that we work in, that's really where there's a big gap. And if we can get over some sort of mindsets and thoughts of, well, that worked for me before and it's working for me now, why would I change? We got to get over some of those hurdles because it will make everybody's life easier. And the potential for doing bigger and better things is absolutely there. So love to see some of the trades start adopting. And we're more than happy to have conversations with them to help them through their journey.
Awesome. And before I ask Ellen the same question, Matt, as your principal a firm here in Denver, of those top 10s, where does your mind go when they give you that top 10 list for something maybe you could take to your firm or the rest of the Art of Construction tribe could take that home?
Well, you know, it's interesting just what Stephen said is it's coming. And so I just on the way over here to sit down for the podcast, I had the conversation with my co-associate principal and I said, hey, you know what? I've been disrupted with these conversations the last few days and it is coming and either we're getting on board or we're going to be left behind. So I would say there's been a lot of information that's been passed along here. Is if there's one takeaway is listen to that top 10 list again and go through there, because I think there's a valuable roadmap there that Turner Fleischer has spent a lot of time and effort in creating and can function as a guidepost along the way as you start to move your firm towards where you need to be.
Yeah, and as Ellen says, and we totally believe that on the Art of Construction is pay it forward and it'll all come together. So, Ellen, what's your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction as the CEO, CFO person in charge?
The future excites me. The future excites me every day. I think the possibilities are endless. What we can do to change the industry by bringing this information and using it at the design phase and, you know, getting rid of these contingencies for errors at the end of a project and really getting into some good collaboration, we're going to build better buildings and we're going to impact the world with our architecture in a much, much better, more meaningful way. And we're going to have some fun doing it for sure.
It's got to be fun.
I love it. So to bring us home, Stephen and Ellen, what is that one thing that you would leave contractors and affiliates thinking about as this is for them to grow their business? What is that one thing you would leave us as we send off to go out and crush it in our businesses?
You know, we keep talking about this and I went to a whole session in Seattle on this and, you know, is throw away the question about ROI. Just get rid of Roy, pretend you never met him and understand that the real ROI is knowing your firm and knowing your staff and your ROI is going to come in spades if you really, you know, stop looking at utilization rates as a marker of success and really start looking at the culture that you're creating and the excitement that you're generating in your staff, wanting and can't wait to come to work every day because we're doing, you know, awesome things. To again, the bottom line of this whole business we're in is, you know, client service. How are we treating our clients and what product are we creating that is going to help them in their businesses?
Awesome. Roy has left the building and Arta Construction is so honored to have you part of the tribe and be part of this culture. And we're such big fans of what you're doing. Stephen, bring us home on this amazing fireside chat.
So it is one thing. Be open to change. Really be open to change. It's going to hurt. We've gone through our growing pains. We've licked our wounds, but the potential is fantastic. And one of the things with sort of the landscape that we're in this AECO industry is a lot of people are going through a lot of the same sort of struggles, successes. So there's a number of different resources. The Art of Construction is a fantastic thing just to hear and connect. This world is a lot smaller than it used to be. The power of WebEx, the power of the internet, the power of data, it's all there. So to actually start implementation, start changing, start growing is actually a lot easier. You just have to have the right mindset, the willingness to want to change and see it through the hills and valleys. There's going to be some rough patches. Push through it. Don't look back because it's just a fruitless exercise if you do, but the potential is there. So change, do it. As Nike said, just do it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming into Studio Arta Construction and telling us your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So much information. We will work and get a lot of that stuff and put it in the show notes. They have been so helpful for the Arta Construction tribe. And give credit where credit is due is to Digital Built Week. So I didn't even know the name Turner Fleischer. And I loved how Stephen gave us the lessons learned about how with the tools, the world, it's so much smaller now. But you do still have to take the time to go out and work on your business and get face-to-face with these people to where you can build that connection and that audience in multiple touch points. So thank you, Digital Built Week. This is kind of that final podcast around that whole series. We've done, I think it's a total of 11 or 12 different podcasts around it. And as Ben Glunz with BIM Smith on his podcast talks about how there's 850 people at this conference that influence over 500,000 jobs. And Turner Fleischer doesn't talk about jobs. It's a culture of moving forward and always be learning that I'm such a fan of. And it's so cool to be have Ellen as part of the tribe that's the CEO and CFO that she just asked herself if we should pay for this, because that's the whole Roy thing is so real as I'm talking to the different people in the Art of Construction tribe. So Matt, what's your takeaway? I know I said at the beginning of this thing, I was going to get you to have a conversation and hopefully that presentation now hit home. What's your takeaway from it?
You know, I think the thing that's really interesting is, you know, everybody wants to go to the business side of the equation of how much it's going to cost me. And I guess listening to both of those folks really saying, you know what, the real question is, you know, what is the time value of money versus the time value of the reinvestment in your company culture? What does that cost you if you're not doing that? And I think that's a very important question that they touched on and have built an entire firm and practice around to give back. So I guess just a final comment I'd make is that Turner Fleischer might want to notify customs at the Toronto airport, because I think after everybody listens to this, they're going to want to come and work for them. So you might even notify the receptionist. So.
Yeah. What an awesome company. And I can't wait to have them back and continued conversations. Many more exciting things to come. So thanks for listening. Tell everybody about it. The Art of Construction Tribe continues to grow, and we're having so much fun connecting the dots and breaking down those crusty contractor silos and bringing in all the new stuff of all these tools, whether it's taking a 3D printer to make lettering, or as we send someone off into the sunset, as they talk about their sunsets from mountains or bike rides and the new people coming in. This is what we mean when we talk the culture of excellence. Crush it out there, tribe.